Born in the pandemic era, thriving in the Zoom era, it's Resonance Rewind, sharing lessons from the creatives of yesteryear for the population of today.
All I could find.
Well, beggars can't be choosing, Dan. Let's chop it up and put it next to my stale bread crust and Fitzhugh's raspberry.
Carrot? Do you anybody
Fitzhugh,
say?
Fitzhugh, read the sign. I made it for you.
They're going to starve to death in this wretched wilderness.
I blame the giants. The way they've been after us lately is hard to find food, and especially in the dark.
Anyone for hors d'oeuvres?
Thank you.
Only one fits you. You're looking at our last can of sardines.
Very well. Just one. Delicious. It perks the appetite before dinner.
That was your dinner.
What?
Take a look at Mother Hubbard's cupboard. It's almost bare.
I've got to have some more food.
Cheer up, Fitzhugh. Maybe Steve and Mark will bring back.
Directed by Sobey Martin, of course, with a teleplay by Jack Turley, a story by Anthony Wilson, and featuring, of course, one of our former Midweek Drivettes, sadly no longer with us, and she passed a few years ago, Celeste Yarnell, as the heroine. Or is she the heroine? Or is she just the bait to actually capture more of our little people in Land of the Giants, the Golden Clay Cage? Well, let's find out a little bit more about that and dig a little bit deeper with one of our key Resonance Rewinders, of course. That's Anna Koshkinel. Anna, your thoughts on The Golden Cage, please.
Well, even though it says Land of the Giants, I can say that I didn't expect giants at first, at least not in the way they were presented. I think it's a very 60s representation of them. And the way, what attracted me most to this episode in particular, it was the way they were talking. I don't know if anyone realizes, but in series or movies or anything now, there's not that way of the pace they were talking in and the way they were so calm even when they were angry that they had that tone. It was a nice episode, but I did like more and enjoyed more this behind the scenes, can I call them, things that were going on there, the way they were dressed, the way they were talking, rather than maybe the action itself.
So thumbs up for the mise en scène there in terms of the cinematic breakdown of this particular episode. Of course, there were 51 shows in the 2 seasons of Land of the Giants, and returning to the tale of obviously our 7 intrepid travellers. Actually, not so much travellers. We have the pilot, co-pilot Gary Conway, and co-pilot Don Marshall, of course, together with engineer Mark Wilson, who was one of the passengers, as indeed was Valerie Scott. Barry, and of course Barry Lockridge, with of course Alexander Fitzhugh, who in this particular episode engages the help of Barry, and of course a pin and a pair of braces to try and capture a turkey. Clearly, there are lots of things you can say about capturing turkeys and so on, and the sheer terror of actually being faced with a giant turkey. Any thoughts on that particular aspect from yourself, Anna?
It was, for me, it was the scene where they were carrying the carrot, to be honest, and me not understanding what's going on, because I was just surprised. I haven't seen that before, or capturing a turkey. So in both instances, I was quite surprised, and I had to rewatch it quite a few times to understand what was going on. But the part where they were working in the forest, it was shot quite different. I read that it was an almost three-dimensional tracking shot, which I had to later on search what it meant. But yes, I mean, it was good. I guess the fight between Mark and Steve, if Steve Barton, if I'm not wrong, was quite interesting, because it's a recurrent theme in, I think, everything that we watched up until now. One of the teammates falls in love with a girl and then left is leaving the team for it. I mean, everybody apparently is leaving everyone for the so-called love, which raises the question, which was later addressed in the movie, if she were this pretty, would he do the same thing? And his teammates say that he would, apparently. So maybe this is bonus points for him.
Yeah, there is that tension, of course, between Steve Burton, as you said, as the captain of the ship, played by Gary Conway, clearly concerned and really not trusting at all at any stage
His judgment.
the portrayal of Marta, even to the extent of when they're actually given a supposed present, a supposed gift, sort of acknowledging. But by that stage, of course, Mark has also felt that actually it could well be a tracking device. So clearly he had to look to get rid of that side of things there. I mean, we saw obviously the scientists here, who in many ways, as portrayed by scientists across the base here, were very much the keepers of Mana Whelan. And we don't really quite know what happens to her parents. Obviously they died, but the way in which she's kind of kept on board. We see in the episode subsequent to this, of course, that there are other examples of other little people who've gone across the dimensional warp that's taken them from obviously what conceivably is the normal sized world to this giant sized world. And there is, of course, that fear in terms of will they actually be captured, will they be experimented on, and so on. There's inevitably the metaphor that tends to be raised about, well, is this the fate of little people across the globe, really, in terms of people are actually chosen to do various things and so on without necessarily appreciating that. And I've also seen a review which also says it's part Star Trek, part Twilight Zone, part Lost in Space. Of course, Lost in Space, another Irwin Allen classic from that side of things there. You mentioned obviously the carrot as one of the significant moments. Was that the kind of key significant moment when we actually have Dan Erickson wandering back to camp with a carrot? Or was it indeed Fitzhugh who basically feels he's just having an hors d'oeuvre of some sardines, and effectively it's obviously his stomach which leads him into danger?
I think it fits for me, as the important moment. It was even at the beginning when I saw it for the first first time, if it, the second time it was the same, but the first time I just had to go back, and I was wondering myself, is that really a carrot that I just saw there, and what they were doing with it in the spaceship? Also, what I have noticed is that during night the space stays lit up, and in the day I think probably it was made just for that, so just for the plot, let's call it like that, so the giants would see them in the end, even if that wasn't what they wanted. But yeah, I think that the ship was really nicely created and represented, even if it's a 60s series and movie.
Yes, the design of a spindrift, of course, a nuclear-powered suborbital flight scenario, which was supposed to be actually very much the way people were traveling back in the 1980s, which, of course, was back in the 60s where it was originally set at the turn of the 1980s. So we haven't quite got there as yet. But who knows, when we actually have Australian billionaires effectively wishing to recreate the Titanic, who knows what sort of likely things will be going for that point of view. Maybe they should actually go for the spindrift instead. Okay, let's talk characters then. Who would be, of the range of things we've actually got there, your favourite character of this particular episode?
So I did like other characters. I can't say more, but I like the way they acted and everything that they did. But my favorite of all times was Marna, because the way she was not only acting, but the way she was talking, and she was so delicate at the same time. And when she gave Mark the flower, that I think, I know that you're going to ask me later on, but that was one of my favorite scenes. I don't know why, probably because in the 60s, there was this thing of masculinity. Yes, where the men had to be tough and rough, especially Mark, who was on the ship and had to, along with the captain, take care of everything. And so he had to be manly. And she came along. She was lost. He obviously rescued her, because we have this thing going on where he rescues her, basically. But she gives him that flower, and I think, maybe it's not considered by others, but I think in my eyes at least, that could also be a key moment in seeing her as a person and how she really is. So that's one of everyone.
And of course, it was indeed in the entire series the only time in which one of the cast members actually had a romantic scene, of course, when Mark actually kisses, yes, Marna. So interesting things there. I have a feeling that had the series gone to a third season, and had it been renewed after its second season, Marna might have been brought back. I think Celeste Yarnell, when I spoke to her about it, said that there was a suggestion that, because clearly it was an unresolved plot thread. We know that she's still there. We know she's still living in this small house and so on. But other than that, would they ever connect again? Would there ever be a rationale for that? Would you have liked to have seen Marna re-emerge in future episodes and see whether she was becoming more, shall we say, cynical, more toughened, or whether she was actually sort of going to maintain that concern? And as she said, that was, as Steve Burton pointed out, that she did actually try to prevent Mark from crossing the white line and getting the electric shock. So there was some indication that she hadn't been completely brainwashed by the giant scientists.
It would have been really interesting to see her more, but at the same time, it happened with so many shows. They started off on some trajectory, and then later on, they came with this character and turned it into not necessarily a love story, but just changed the whole idea of the series. So yeah, it would have been nice, but it's really good this way too. Maybe it would have been good to end the story somehow on a higher note, but it's good the way it is. This one, I really think it's good the way it is.
Of course, she could always have actually joined the crew of the Spindrift and actually maybe, I don't know, done something like help to cook the turkey or whatever, if they ever catches another turkey again, but who knows. So strange that was seemingly the only turkey that was actually around. It was almost as though it was a lost turkey. Because normally you'd find that turkeys would be gathering in sort of groups of turkeys, etc. But clearly that was the only one they actually had. And of course, they do have that diet of potato chips and stale green peas, which is enough to actually keep anybody sustained, I would have thought, in terms of suitable nutrients and so on. Okay, let's move to the scores then. What is your score, Anikosh Gonel, for this particular episode of Land of the Giants? In fact, actually, before we do that, is this a series that you'd be keen to actually watch more of? Is it a case of no one and done, etc.? Or again, given it was aired just after Christmas, actually, December 29th, 1968, when it first had its first airing, is this one that effectively you say, I don't know. I mean, it leaves all sorts of sort of unanswered questions. So would you consider watching it again, or is it a case of that's it?
So there are a few key things that are going on here regarding this, because unlike other series that we have watched, this is available on platforms without having to buy it. So this is a big plus, really big plus. I can say that it's not necessarily my type of series or anywhere near what I would watch normally, but I did like the acting a lot, and I told you I do enjoy seeing movies from the 60s or 70s because of the way they are acting, and everybody, if you look at their costumes, their makeup, the way they look, everybody's just so beautiful and delicate, and they, even if they have to be tough and rough, they still do it in such a, I can say, distinguished way. I don't know, it's just, it's the way of acting. So
they've got a dress code. They wouldn't be prevented from actually going into the In and Out Club in London if they actually at least had the right kind of dress in there. We know this. It's okay.
Yes, I'm going to watch it probably more.
There you go. Okay, and your score out of 10, Anna, for this particular show?
It's going to be 7.5.
And we'll find out next what hopefully Victoria Simmons and Jessica Burtis make of Land of the Giants episode, The Golden Cage.
They really know how to bait a trap.
Come on.
There you go. You're going to leave her there?
That's right.
We can't.
Oh, come on. Don't be a sucker. They've tried every trick in the book to grab us, and now they're using the oldest one of all.
That girl is bait. So she's bait, but she's one of us. Our own size. Look at her.
I've looked. It's all very tempting.
I'm going to get a little closer.
It's exactly what they want us to do.
But we have to find out about her, who she is, where she came from. You don't even wonder about that?
Yes, I wonder about that, but we'll both do our wondering back here, not any closer.
It's night, and that girl is all alone out there. We can't just leave her and walk away.
We can and we will.
All right, all right. We both know it's a trap. So what? At least we could let her know we're here, say something to her.
Like what? What do you want us to say?
That girl's a human being, no different from you or me. How would you feel if you were locked in that bottle?
I said no. If you want to go out there, you're going to have to go for me first.
Okay, we've heard what Anikosh Gonel had to make of the 12th episode in the first season of Land of the Giants. Let's turn to Jessica Burtis now. Jessica, the little people are back. We know how much you like the little people. I don't think we had Chipper the dog in this particular one, but we did, of course, have Celeste Yarnell as Mana in The Golden Cage. So your thoughts, please, Jessica.
So, I mean, this series is so cute to me. I love just all of the giant objects, like the big jar, the giant turkey. I think it's so fun how this show works, and it does make me want to really watch it more chronologically. And I like that my dad said that he had actually watched this show as a kid, and he still remembered about how it was kind of a Gilligan's Island but in space and miniature. So I just think this show is really fun. And I think that this episode was interesting in that it really delved into the psyche behind some of the characters and just the idea of being turned into a doll by these giants, and that these giants have a different dynamic with some of these humans, and that some of them are actually kind of like pets or toys to them. I thought that was really interesting because I wonder if Marna comes back up very much in the series. Her character was very much kind of it felt like Stockholm Syndrome, kind of, with her character quite a lot. But I think it was interesting how there were just changing relationships between the characters, like Mark and Steve, and how Marna appearing kind of had them confronting each other and disagreeing. I also just like how one whole like side plot, like one part of the plot was this very deep, meaningful Golden Cage idea of her being trapped in this kind of comfy life, but she's actually a doll. And then just the other plot was them hunting a giant turkey. So I thought it was very the dualism was very interesting.
Yeah, Fitzhugh obviously having a big appetite and clearly wanted to actually satiate that appetite. But at the end, once again, as often occurs with Kurt Kasner's incarnation of Alexander Fitzhugh, doesn't quite succeed. As we mentioned earlier, I think certainly when I spoke to Celeste Yarnell, the intention if the series had gone to a third season was possibly to bring back Marna, but sadly that was never to be. But it would be interesting to maybe do a sequel some years down the line to actually talk about what was happening with the little people, if they're still in the land of the giants. Okay, so an interesting summation there. Certainly, the line of part Star Trek, part Twilight Zone, part Lost in Space was worth noting in terms of the notion of Star Trek's The Cage, of course, the episode where we actually had Susan Oliver's character effectively there as the sole female, and Christopher Pike very much paired up from that perspective. But given, of course, that I did say part Star Trek, part Twilight Zone, part Lost in Space, I really don't know whether we've sabotaged the line from Victoria Simmons, because she's not a big Star Trek fan, so she might turn around and say, "Oh, not sure about that." Victoria, have you encountered Land of the Giants before?
Yeah, I think we did one a few weeks ago, didn't we? A few months ago. I know I've seen it before.
Okay, well, the series, excellent. In which case, talk us through your take on this particular episode of Owen Allen's Wonderment.
Well, I think I googled quite a few things that Jessica said actually, but every time I was watching it the whole way through, I was going, oh, I wonder how they did that. That must have been a big set. It's kind of like the Borrowers. And I was sort of thinking a lot of the backstage elements to it, which were probably quite difficult to film. I did wonder about her food source when she's sort of going, oh, well, this is how I can have it. I have it as roast beef and I can have anything I want. I'm thinking, yeah, but you wouldn't what? But they say 9 when she left Earth. How do you know what all these things taste like? And then they're coming up as little square blobs, which must be to the giants sort of the size of a pea, maybe not even that. So it's slightly interesting how they're feeding her as well. But that's what my mind goes to, the food.
You're certainly
It
saying
goes
that,
well with the giant turkey, so I'm obviously in that
yeah,
vein.
and of course the potato chips and giant stale peas that Betty and Dan effectively managed to discover as a kind of cast aside leftovers of the giant picnic from that line of things. So yes, food very much there, and the need to actually seek out food is very much to the fore there. Anything else, Jessica, in terms of favourite moments from this particular episode?
I think finding Marna in that jar where she's just lounging so casually, like Cleopatra, was very, that was funny, stuck in my head. And I think the fight between Steve and Mark as well. And just seeing them trying to wrangle this turkey, and it's just, they're pulling on something out of shot, and then you just see this image of a turkey going by. I thought that was so fun. That was really cute, honestly, just everything about it. Cute.
Yes, sir.
And then also the whole, sorry. And then the part where Marna's talking about how she likes to garden, but sometimes they don't let her go out in her garden. And he gets Mark gets that shock on his hand when he's trying to leave, and you realize, oh, it's very serious that these giants won't let her leave whenever she wants to. Yeah, I think those are the big moments to me.
Yes, Mark actually getting, I thought it would have been a much stronger electric shock, actually, because obviously the white line was down, and the panic of Marna, I felt that it might be a kind of almost heart-stopping electric shock, but clearly that wasn't the case. Victoria is, of course, as ever, quite right. It was actually Friday, September 22nd on 2023 or in the year 2023, when effectively you joined us, Victoria, together with Jared Palmer, to discuss the Land of the Giants episode, The Mechanical Man, which, of course, was in our robot scenario. We follow that up, of course, by looking at Ex Machina the following week. All these things you can, of course, download, should you wish to, from our usual web places on southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. Let's turn back to yourself, though, Victoria, in terms of your favourite moments from this particular episode.
Yeah, there are so many good moments. I want to know more about the garden. I want them to explore that. I mean, they told you about it, but they didn't show it or explore it any further. That was sort of like one of those unique things that I ended up going, well, come on then, show me. And you keep watching it. So maybe it was just for that. But, which one to pick? I quite like just the expressions on his face when he's dealing with the turkey. I mean, every expression that he gives is just brilliantly done, because it's going from desperation to excitement to wonderment. And then, we're going to have to let it go. And anything to do with the turkey for me was really good.
Well, again, will it be classified as a turkey epic episode? Possibly not, but again, intriguing for it from that perspective. Music, Victoria, any thoughts on this? Because John Williams, of course, who produced the theme for this particular episode, would, of course, go on to become the most favoured, and still is, obviously, the most favoured composer of Steven Spielberg, and would work together with Spielberg on a vast number of projects, including, of course, producing the soundtrack for the non-Spielberg epic Star Wars, and indeed the entirety of the Superman series.
Yeah, I'm not, as you say, well-versed in Star Trek and Star Wars and anything like that. But I actually enjoyed the music. It wasn't one-dimensional. It had quite a variety, and it wasn't, and what I mean when I say not one-dimensional, it had several different instruments playing and actually being a theme all the way through, whereas sometimes you just get the dun 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 or something all the at certain moments. But this actually had a composition. It had musicality, and that made it even more enjoyable, I think, for me.
And Harry Geller, who of course also did a lot of the incidental music for this, has also contributed to three series, all of which we've considered at various times and probably will return to in Resonance Rewind: Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, The Wild Wild West, and of course Mission Impossible. Jessica, favourite characters? Is it a case of you're going to throw in the scientists, obviously, because they were clearly sort of looking after Lana? So we could have Douglas Bank as the giant scientist, or Dawson Palmer as the first scientist, Paige Slattery as the second scientist. Or are you going to go for Celeste Yarnall on the basis of the fact that, well, she was a midrig drivette and surely she deserves it for the role of Marna Whelan? Or will you go down the line of Kurt Kasner and Alexander Fitzhugh? Or are you going somewhere else? Jessica, what would you like to do?
Well, I feel like honorable mentions, Marna, of course, because her character was so compelling with those moments where she was talking with Mark on the couch and was very much saying, you know, don't ruin this, don't ruin my happiness, because it's, you kind of got the sense that she knew that being kept as a doll wasn't right, but it was like a coping skill for her, and she didn't want to give that up, and it was very self-aware and very sad. I think another honorable mention is the lady in the yellow. I thought she was really cool.
Essie and Hamilton.
Thank you, yes. And I wanted to know more about her character, but the turkey was also, I think, an honorable mention. Turkey, it was great, especially scenes. But I thought that Steve also was a really compelling character, and I think might be my favorite for this episode, just because he was kind of the side where he kind of knew what was going on with Mark a bit, but Mark was just kind of love blind. But I thought the whole trying to help the everyone with the turkey and actually standing up and everything with the conflict with Mark, I thought that made him a really interesting character when at first noticed him at all.
It's Gary Conway, who prior to Land of the Giants had also starred in a series called Burke's Law with Gene Barry. I think he actually owns a winery in California at present. So I think he has a vineyard. So he's kind of stepped away from the acting profession. And of course, he's one of the few members of the cast who's still with us. Sadly, we've lost a number over the years. And I don't think, if memory serves, we had Barry Lockridge's dog Chipper in this particular one, which I think was possibly Victoria's choice for a character in the Mechanical Man episode of Land of the Giants. Victoria, when it comes to characters, who are you going to go with? Is it a case of the almost Thumbelina-esque Marta, or are you going elsewhere?
She is... I don't know. I think I possibly have... do I have two favourites? She's definitely one of the favourites because she just goes... She actually does do quite a few... moods. You sort of see her going from a nothing, like an almost an airhead, have no idea what she keeps asking what different words mean, and then when you take her into her world, then she's really intelligent and you know exact she knows exactly what she's doing. So I think I think probably she will have to be
overthink the
guy going for the I don't know his name. I'm trying to look it up.
The Alexander Fitzhugh, the man who was looking for the turkey.
Yes, I think it has to be one of those for top place. But really, I think they're tied. Acting wise, I think he does get the top for me. I don't know why. I just like it.
So Kurt Kasnar basically wins. I just actually popped up and I'll put this into the Facebook feed if required. That was actually Celeste Yarnell with Phil Leonis and Dean Haglund and Celeste's husband a few years ago, where they actually put together the Southside logo as well and effectively sort of did a piece for us at San Diego Comic-Con, if memory serves. So that was times there. So obviously we're biased and I will stick with Celeste because this is part of a kind of trilogy that we're looking at some of Celeste Yarnell's work. We'll see her in subsequent weeks in the Man from U.N.C.L.E. episode, The Monks of St. Thomas Affair, where she portrays a French lady. And of course, just for yourself, Victoria, she's back in Star Trek territory as the yeoman who has a relationship with Ensign Chekhov in the second season episode, The Apple. But Jessica, anything else you'd like to add in terms of the overview before we start going down the line of scores?
Just on the subject of music, it's interesting that you mentioned that John Williams did the score, because while I was listening to it at a couple points, I was thinking that it sounded kind of similar to the Star Wars theme. So I thought that was interesting to hear. Oh, actually, the one who did the Star Wars theme did this. But I think the costumes deserve a good mention because I thought that they were so interesting. I love the 60s costuming. And I mean, Marna's hair was incredible. Don't know how all of the characters are dressed so well with such great hair after they're stranded on this strange land. But they all had such amazing costumes. I felt like it just looked so cool. So I thought it needed a mention.
Yes, I think in the case of the character of Mark, the only sort of indication that he's actually having a stressful time is he actually has lost his tie. So effectively, he still has his waistcoat, but the tie is obviously gone and that's lost early on. Other than that, it's nice to see that both Valerie, as portrayed by Deanna Lund, and Betty Hamilton, as played by Heather Young, managed to actually pretty much have immaculate coiffures throughout from that point of view. And Marna, well, again, she's based in a jam jar or indeed in a perfect house. So why should she actually change in any way, shape or form? Okay, so Jessica, let's move on to scores. What would your score be for this particular episode, Land of the Giants, The Golden Cage?
I think I'm going to give this one 7.5. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really fun episode. It's not my favorite, but I did really like it. And I think I'll give it an 8 because the turkey was just excellent. I thought he played his role so well. So I think it deserves a solid 8. It would be good for a rewatch, honestly.
Yeah, certainly not a case of actually having a scenario where CGI replaced the turkey. But I think we can also say that no hurt turkeys were actually harmed during the making of the actual production, at least as far as we know. Victoria, thoughts from yourself?
I don't know. What did I give the first one in November? Do you remember?
In September, you'd have to go back. We have good records, but we haven't actually sort of got a record of the scores.
Well, everybody will have to go back and see if I liked the first one then. But no, I'm with Jessica 100%, solid 8
Well,
out of
there we
10 for
are.
this one.
We'll probably squeeze in a little bit of Victoria's latest soundtracks as well, because recently, of course, you were taking part in not well a fantastic song contest. Clearly, you were the sole person who was destined to win it, but amazingly, Jessica, the judges has other ideas. I mean, I don't know. I can't understand that in any way, shape, or form. It's just the way things go. But we've got three songs back to back. Would you like to actually sort of say what we're about to listen to, Victoria?
I don't know what you're about to listen to, other than it's my music.
Well, the three songs that
Because
you
you didn't
performed
tell me.
at the three songs that you performed at the recent song contest, and they are.
I started with October Girl, then I went on to si Still a Long Way to Go, and finished with Doubt Love and got everybody singing along.
And strangely enough, we could actually say that Mana was an October Girl. Certainly, she doubted love. Mark doubted the love that he actually had for Mana. And the Land of the Giants is an awfully long way away from us. And for them to actually get back to Earth, well, certainly it is still a long way to go. So clearly, they all fit in seamlessly into the production, which is what we always knew would be the case. Next week, we will be actually going down the line of spy-fi once again. We'll be talking not so much about turkeys or indeed giant carrots, which Jess, rather, Anna was fascinated by the giant carrot. I was interested to see neither yourself, Jessica, nor Victoria mention the giant carrot, which, of course, was the opening sequence of this particular episode, where we see Dan struggling back to the ship, armed or basically with a huge carrot upon his person. So that was an intriguing line for that. But we will be talking about liqueurs and possibly the likelihood of liqueurs on ice. We've also got those dastardly, diabolic characters from Thrush attempting world domination. And of course, as we promised, Celeste Jarnell portrays a French girl who has a fiance called Adolphe. Can it get much better? Well, check out Resonance Rewind, The Monks of St. Thomas the Fur, season 3, episode of The Man from U.N.C.L.E. That's still to come. For now, though, thanks to Anna Koshkinol, thanks to Jessica Burtis and Victoria Simmons. And as ever, keep on resonating.
Fun into my charms. nice here. So lovely and quiet.
It's quiet.
Welcome to Marna's home. I'm glad you've come to visit Marna. Can you understand?
Go on, Mark. Talk to him.
What kind of trick is this?
It is no trick. This screen is connected by cable to my laboratory. We do not want to harm you.
Then why am I your prisoner?
You are free to come and go as you wish. The fence door is already open for you.
What happened to Marna's parents?
They're dead. I am sorry.
Let's get away. Come on, we can make it.
Mark, there's no need to get away. Everything we need is here. I know what's wrong. You're hungry.
From the first day that I saw you, you were everything I wanted to get. I thought you could be my Romeo and that I could be your lovely Juliet. First it seemed it would be perfect, but good old Shakespeare, he's always right. That love burned as hard as ours did, could only end up in a fight. Tears on my pillow, oh I cried much too. Turns to pain. All your kisses, all your touches made me feel so good. Now they're driving me insane. I know I'd be devastated if you never ever touched me anymore. I can't let you go, but I can live with you. So never open and never close my door. Tears on my
keep moving. If I don't, they'll know something's wrong and come after us. I can run that way and get rid of it someplace.
And if it does have a homing device, the giants will find it and know we're on to them.
We've got to split up and take separate routes back to the ship. Fitzhugh, you and Barry start out and Go that way.
No, Captain. That is my direction. I'm going to get my turkey. He's tied up and waits to be fricasseed. I'd rather die than disappoint him.
Okay, okay. Go ahead and get your turkey. Yeah. Yeah, maybe the rest of you better go with him. Mark and I will stay back here and see if his suspicions are correct. Go on. About that girl. Do you think she was deliberately trying to trap you for them?
I don't think so. She just brainwashed.
Come on. We'll keep tracking us down with that detector they've got. Maybe not. Let's go.
We'll be right back.